you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
From the Jill Schwartz Memorial Library here in sultry Savannah, this is Obscure, Season 3, Wuthering Heights. I am your host, your friend, your ear lover, your literary mansplainer-in-chief, and Georgianologist Michael Ian Black, Southern Gentleman, ESQ. Exhausted today. I didn't sleep a wink last night. Just horrendous tossing and turning in my bed. First I was hot, then I was cold. My head was hurting. I wasn't ill, but I just could not get myself situated comfortably. My body temperature would not regulate. It was abysmal, an abysmal evening here in sultry Savannah. Part of it's just I've been traveling so much, you know, and just got home late last night from the city of Lost Wages, as they sometimes call it, Las Vegas, where I was participating in a poker television show, which was a good deal of fun. But man, I'm paying for it now. I went crazy there in Las Vegas. I mean, I was staying up past midnight. I was playing poker. I was cavorting, and then in a display of just absolute debauchery, I guess is what you'd call it, I consumed an entire bag of gummy bears that was in the hotel room for purchase. It wasn't a big bag, but you know they charge, you know, you get the in-room snacks, you know, you pay through the nose for those. I probably dropped like $6 on that bag of gummy bears. I didn't even look at the price. I was just like, fuck it. I'm in Las Vegas. I'm going to go crazy. And I saw those gummy bears and I was just like, I don't even know when the last time I had gummy bears is. Years and years of a gummy bear less life. And well, that situation was rectified out there in Las Vegas. So yeah, it was off the chain. That's what it was, just off the chain. Well, now I'm back and off to Scotland next week. Gonna hang out at the Fringe Festival with my friend Joe Stapleton, who has a show there. And so yeah, every time I begin one of these episodes, I've just returned from somewhere. Well, I've just been traveling a lot, you know, accumulating miles, making people smiles. And all the whiles, I'm still finding time to read Wuthering Heights. It's just a joy, you know, to return to that misery after a fun weekend, because, you know, the shot was, oh, I'm in Vegas playing poker on the TV. The chaser is, and I get to come home and revel in the misery of these terrible creatures in the great American novel Wuthering Heights. And there is some writhing, there is some gnashing of teeth and beating of breast there at Wuthering Heights, where Mr. Heathcliff has poor Isabella Linton practically held captive there in squalor and misery. It's just an atrocious living situation for her. And last time we spoke, Nellie had come over to visit, and Heathcliff has basically just unburdened himself on her, explaining that it's her own fault for falling in love with me. She got these stupid notions that I'm some sort of romantic hero in her head, and she practically threw herself on me. And to teach her a lesson, I married her and am enjoying torturing her here in this place. Now, he doesn't mean physically. It's more of a kind of spiritual and psychological torture, because he says that he was careful to keep all of his, well, here's what he says, in his experiments on what she could endure. But, he says, I keep strictly within the limits of the law. So he, you know, he's being cruel, but not illegally so. And, you know, I guess there's not much more you can ask for in a spouse than that. And he says, I'll just read the last part of where we were. I have avoided up to this period giving her the slightest right to claim a separation. And what's more, she'd thank nobody for dividing us. If she desired to go, she might. The nuisance of her presence outweighs the gratification to be derived from tormenting her. So he's basically saying, hey, sweetheart, there's the door. Don't let it kick you in the ass on the way out. That's what he's saying. And that's where we left it last time. You know, it's not as much fun tormenting her as he thought it would be. And that concluded his soliloquy of the last episode. It's where we ended it last episode. So let us pick it back up here on chapter 14, Wuthering Heights. Mrs. Dean is responding to Heathcliff's soliloquy. Mr. Heathcliff, said I, this is the talk of a madman, and your wife, most likely, is convinced you are mad, and for that reason she has borne with you hitherto. But now that you say she may go, she'll doubtless avail herself of the permission. You are not so bewitched, ma'am, are you, as to remain with him of your own accord? Well, what do you think she's going to say? What does a beaten dog do when given the opportunity to leave? Does it stay or does it go? The Clash wrote a whole song about it, with Joe Strummer as the lead dog. So Isabella responds, take care, Ellen, answered Isabella, her eyes sparkling irefully. There was no misdoubting by their expression the full success of her partner's endeavors to make himself detested. Don't put faith in a single word he speaks. He's a lying fiend, a monster, and not a human being. I've been told I might leave him before, and I've made the attempt, but I dare not repeat it. Only Ellen, promise you'll not mention a syllable of his infamous conversation to my brother or Catherine. Whatever he may pretend, he wishes to provoke Edgar to desperation. He says he has married me on purpose to obtain power over him, and he shan't obtain it. I'll die first. I just hope, I pray, that he may forget his diabolical prudence and kill me. The single pleasure I can imagine is to die or to see him dead. Well, and she's just saying this right in front of him, you know. It seems like this is just the way Heathcliff operates in the world. Because everybody wants him dead. Heathcliff wants everybody dead, except for Catherine. And, of course, we already know that Catherine is going to be the one who does die. Although, apparently, Isabella may die as well. Death, death, death. He just brings it bustling around him wherever he goes. In this way, again, he is like Frankenstein's creature. He's like the goofus to the creature's gallant. I don't know if you remember Highlights for Children magazine, but one of my favorite features when I was a kid was Goofus and Gallant. And Goofus was a boy who who given the opportunity, always made the wrong decision. Gallant, who I always assumed was his twin brother, would always make the correct decision, and then they would show you in cartoon form what Goofus did and what Gallant did. Well, Heathcliff is kind of the Goofus to Frankenstein's creatures, Gallant. Big Buddies is a little bit more Gallant in his killings, in his bringing of death. Now, we don't know that Heathcliff has actually ever killed anybody, but he certainly desires to. And that black heart, you know, just may get his way. So Isabel is saying she tried to leave, but she couldn't. We don't know why yet. Maybe we'll find that out at some point. There, that will do for the present, said Heathcliff. If you are called upon in a court of law, you'll remember her language, Nelly. If you get court, if you get summoned to court, geez. Heathcliff just does not foresee a good ending for him or anybody else here. And take a good look at that countenance. She's near the point which would suit me. No, you're not fit to be your own guardian, Isabella, now. And I, being your legal protector, must retain you in my custody, however distasteful the obligation may be. Go upstairs. I have something to say to Ellen Dean in private. That's not the way. Upstairs, I tell you. Why, this is the road upstairs, child. He seized and thrust her from the room and returned muttering, I have no pity. I have no pity. The more the worms writhe, the more I yearn to crush out their entrails. It is a moral teething, and I grind with greater energy in proportion to the increase of pain. So he's training himself to be pitiless. It's like he wants to wring out whatever humanity he has in him. Whereas Big Buddy does everything in his power to seek out his own humanity. Man, somebody should just do a kind of critical analysis between Wuthering Heights and Frankenstein, because it is two different versions of the monster. What is a monster? How does one go about creating a monster? Is it self-created? I don't know. I do not know. Or is the monster always the victim of circumstance? Because it clearly feels like Heathcliff is trying to make himself into a monster, but maybe he feels like he must because the world rejected him, just as the world rejected Big Buddy. And there is one oasis for him, and that is Catherine. And, you know, we remember Big Buddy, he just wanted Frankenstein to make him a lady friend. Hey, just make me a lady friend, Shakespeare. That's all I need, Shakespeare, just a lady friend. Then we'll swim across to South America. We'll swim across the ocean there to South America. Make some monster babies. But alas, that never happened. And Heathcliff's like, "Hey, Shakespeare, I just want to get with Catherine again. Can't I just get with Catherine again? No? Then I'm going to burn the world down." Mrs. Dean says, "Do you understand what the word pity means?" I said, hastening to resume my bonnet. "Did you ever feel a touch of it in your life?" "Put that down," he interrupted, perceiving my intention to depart. "You are not going yet. Come here now, Nelly. I must either persuade or compel you to aid me in fulfilling my determination to see Catherine, and that without delay. I swear that I meditate no harm. I don't desire to cause any disturbance or to exasperate or insult Mr. Linton. I only wish to hear from herself how she is and why she has been ill, and to ask if anything that I could do would be of use to her. Last night I was in the Grange Gardens 6 hours, and I'll return there tonight. And every night I'll haunt the place, and every day, till I find an opportunity of entering. If Edgar Linton meets me, I shall not hesitate to knock him down and give him enough to ensure his quiescence while I stay. If his servants oppose me, I shall threaten them off with pistols. But wouldn't it be better to prevent my coming in contact with them or their master? And you could do it so easily. I'd warn you when I came, and then you might let me in unobserved, as soon as she was alone, and watch till I departed, your conscience quite calm. You would be hindering mischief."
Well, then why didn't he just do that already, what he said he was going to do? If he's such a big, bad, brave man, why didn't he just go into the house already, knock down Edgar Linton draw, you know, his brace of pistols and point them at the servants and scream, "Take me to her!" You know, like some bandito. Well, he hasn't done it yet. So, you know, I'm thinking he's not going to do it. He's just a big bully. I protested against playing that treacherous part in my employer's house. And besides, I urged the cruelty and selfishness of his destroying Mrs. Linton's tranquility for his satisfaction. "The commonest occurrence startles her painfully," I said. "She's all nerves, and she couldn't bear the surprise, I'm positive. Don't persist, sir, or else I shall be obliged to inform my master of your designs, and he'll take measures to secure his house and its intimates from any such unwarrantable intrusions." "In that case, I'll take measures to secure you, woman," exclaimed Heathcliff. "You shall not leave Wuthering Heights till tomorrow morning. It is a foolish story to assert that Catherine could not bear to see me. And as to surprising her, I don't desire it. You must prepare her. Ask her if I may come. You say she never mentions my name, and that I am never mentioned to her. To whom should she mention me if I am a forbidden topic in the house? She thinks you are all spies for her husband. Oh, I've no doubt she's in hell among you. I guess by her silence, as much as anything, what she feels. You say she's often restless and anxious-looking. Is that a proof of tranquility? You talk of her mind being unsettled. How the devil could it be otherwise in her frightful isolation? And that insipid, paltry creature attending her from duty and humanity, from pity and charity. You might as well plant an oak tree in a flower pot and expect it to thrive, as imagine he can restore her to vigor in the soil of his shallow cares. Let us settle it at once. Will you stay here? And am I to fight my way to Catherine over Linton and his footmen? Or will you be my friend, as you have been hitherto, and do what I request? Decide, because there is no reason for my lingering another minute if you persist in your stubborn, ill nature." All right, well, he's got a funny notion of friendship, I think, if he's calling her his friend. You know, because that's a two-way street there, Pally. She's been good enough to you, but what have you been to her? Nothing but a pain in the rear end. Excuse my French. But, yeah, he's got a peculiar notion. You know, he's kind of like an Ayn Randian figure, you know? He's like Howard Roark or something. Which one is Howard Roark in? Atlas Shrugged or The Fountainhead? I can't remember, but the architect there, or the other, or, you know, the other, all of Ayn Rand's protagonists are these sort of cold, calculating, pitiless, almost machine-like figures. They are cold and aloof and pursue their goals with a kind of unswerving aim. Terrible people. You know, she paints them as heroes, of course, but they're just not great people. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Back in a moment, here on Obscure.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Back in obscure, finding traces of Ayn Rand here in Wuthering Heights. You know, Heathcliff is basically saying, step aside, Nellie. You know, help me out or get out of the way, because I'm coming. And when I come, I'm coming rough and ready. He's got to see her. He's got to see Catherine in her sickbed to determine for himself her condition. But it's largely because of him that she's in this condition. He's the reason that she got the vapors to begin with, you know? What is he looking for from her? Some reinsurance? I'm stumbling over my words. You can hear how exhausted I am today. Just so tired. Fantasizing about napping, even as I speak with you. That's just not a good headspace to be in when you're trying to critically analyze American literature like I am. This takes all my synapses firing. And when I'm hungover from gummy bears, I just can't get myself together. So he's trying to persuade Nellie to help him out, calling on her friendship. And let's see what she says. Well, Mr. Lockwood. So now she returns us to the present moment for a change. Remember, this whole thing is being told to Lockwood, our narrator, just like in Frankenstein. Well, Mr. Lockwood, I argued and complained and flatly refused him 50 times. But in the long run, he forced me to an agreement. I engaged to carry a letter from him to my mistress, and should she consent, I promised to let him have intelligence of Linton's next absence from home, when he might come and get in as he was able. I wouldn't be there, and my fellow servants should be equally out of the way. All right, well, that's a decent compromise, I suppose. He'll have the run of the house, he can go in, he can talk to Catherine and get the hell out, okay? No fuss, no muss, nobody gets troubled, nobody gets bothered. Well, that sounds like good intentions to me, but we all know what the road to hell is paved with, do we not? Was it right or wrong? I fear it was wrong, though expedient. I thought I prevented another explosion by my compliance. And I thought, too, it might create a favorable crisis in Catherine's mental illness. And then I remembered Mr. Edgar's stern rebuke of my carrying tales, and I tried to smooth away all disquietude on the subject by affirming, with frequent iteration, that that betrayal of trust, if it merited so harsh an appellation, should be the last. Notwithstanding, my journey homeward was sadder than my journey thither, and many misgivings I had, ere I could not prevail on myself to put the missive into Mrs. Linton's hand. But here it is, Kenneth. I'll go down and tell him how much better you are. My history is dree. Oh, there's a footnote. Wait, Kenneth, isn't Kenneth the doctor, or is Kenneth Lockwood? I'll go and tell him how much better you are. Here is... I see. She's in the present, right? And you know, you remember Lockwood came in from the rain, all chills and shivered, and then he's been on the mend. And so she's saying, here's Kenneth, meaning the doctor. I'll go down and tell him how much better you are. My history is dree, as we say, and will serve to while away another morning. So dree, let's look up that on the old footnotes. Oh, sad, dreary, dree. Dree and dreary, I reflected as the good woman descended to receive the doc. So this is Lockwood talking. My goodness. There's no quotations or anything to indicate that she's stopped speaking. But anyway, Lockwood says, dree and dreary, I reflected as the good woman descended to receive the doctor. and not exactly of a kind which I should have chosen to amuse me. But never mind. I'll extract wholesome medicines from Mrs. Dean's bitter herbs. And firstly, let me beware of the fascination that lurks in Catherine Heathcliff's brilliant eyes. I should be in a curious taking if I surrendered my heart to that young person, and the daughter turned out a second edition of the mother. What daughter? Wait, what? I didn't understand that. Anyway, that's the end of chapter 14, but I didn't understand that. Hold on a second. Dreary, right? So sad and dreary. I reflected as the good woman descended to receive the doctor, okay? And not exactly of a kind which I should have chosen to amuse me. So his reflections are not there to amuse him, but he's reflecting. But never mind. Don't worry about that. I'll extract wholesome medicines from Mrs. Dean's bitter herbs, right? I'll take some medicine. And firstly, let me beware of the fascination that lurks in Catherine Heathcliff's brilliant eyes. Wait, Catherine Heathcliff? Catherine ends up marrying Heathcliff? What? I'm too tired to understand what's happening here. I should be in a curious taking if I surrendered my heart to that young person, the daughter of Heathcliff. And the daughter turned out a second edition of the mother. So there's a Catherine Heathcliff in this book? Is there a young woman in this book that I have totally forgotten about? I guess so. I don't know. Honest to God, I don't know. Should we stop there? I mean, it is the end of the chapter. Should we just go a little short today? I guess so. You know, anytime you come to the end of a chapter, it's just such a good time to put the book down and stretch your weary limbs and contemplate another cup of tea. I've already gone through two. I don't think I'll have a third. Really, all I want to do is go back to bed. I'm just not with it today. But I had to record, you understand. Obligated to record. Not that I didn't want to, but, you know, you're churning out these episodes week after week. The kid's on a schedule. We've got to turn these things over. Lickety-split. So we'll end there. Chances are I'm going to crawl back into bed. And, I guess that's it. Next time I speak to you, maybe from Scotland. I got to remember to bring the book with me across the pond there to the Bonny Highlands of Scotland. So we'll see. Anywho, hope everybody is doing as fabulously as I am. And we'll discuss further exploits of Lockwood and Heathcliff and the whole gang on another, frankly, exhausted episode of Obscure. But until then, I wish you adieu. This season of Obscure is produced by me, Michael Ian Black, and the great Robin Lynn. Our theme song is by Craig Wedren. We rely on you, the listeners, for support. So please, go to patreon.com/MichaelIanBlack, sign up. There's all kinds of fun stuff. There's goodies. You could join the book club where we get together. We talk about the book that we're reading. And it's just a fun community. So, you know, head on over to patreon.com/MichaelIanBlack. And I will see you next time.